Welcome to episode 26 of the Believe Knicks pod. It's an exciting episode. We have a special guest for you again. Today's guest is a writer and a stats wonk. You have seen his work at Posting and Toasting and the Strickland, as well as various other sites and pods. Welcome for the first time to the Believe Knicks pod, Drew Steele. Drew, how are you doing today?
What's up, guys? I am so happy to be here because finally somebody from the people I know actually want to talk to me about the Knicks. It's great.
I'm excited. We lost the raffle this week, so we have Drew on the show today. But
can I ask you one question, actually, for some of our listeners? Where did Doug come from?
Oh, they obviously, like all things, came from Stingy, which is at Itho on Twitter. I'm pretty sure Stink, I was like, hey, this is Drew, and he goes, okay, Doug. And I'm like, okay. Like, it's Stink. It's just the best way to explain it. Like, it's a Stink thing.
I thought it was like from the Nickelodeon show or something. You
know? No, it's from Stink, and I think it's primarily because we were talking about Twin Peaks The Return, and there's a character named Dougie Jones, which is played by Kyle MacLachlan.
Mm. Gotcha. I was always hoping there was a Dougie Fresh connection, like somewhere in the background.
No, it is specifically more of a reference to Twin Peaks. But yes, it is a Stingy creation. And listen, you can't control that guy.
You cannot. So.
It's a deep cut, and that's what it is. It's a Twin Peaks reference, and he just started calling me that because he didn't know my name probably for a good 2 years.
Well, we will be talking with Drew, aka Doug, about a few Knick topics today. Mitchell Robinson will come up first. We'll talk a little Julius Randle. We'll talk a little reality of covering the team. But first, our partners at BetOnline continue to be the number one source for all your betting needs and sports info. Find all of the latest sports developments, including updated odds on the NBA playoffs, fights, and even next season's futures. And don't forget, Major League Baseball is back as well. Who are you picking to win the World Series? I would suggest you give some thought to the 10-4 New York Mets when you consider your World Series props. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sports wagering needs, including live betting and your favorite Vegas casino and poker games. It's super easy to get started, so head to the website today or use your mobile device to join and use the promo code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, where the game starts. Drew, where the episode starts is what you and I were talking about earlier in the fabulous Believe Green Room. Mitchell Robinson will be up for free agency, and there is quite a bit of lively debate among Knick fans. And I heard some of this lively debate was happening in the Discord, that there was Discord in the Discord. About this,
there was
this. Well, I want to know what is this, Mitchell? Is this the classic keep or don't keep Mitch debate? What were you guys debating about, and where do you stand on the issue? Whatever it is,
I would actually, before we get into it, I would just love to know what Stacy's tone was, since everyone knows the internet, you can't read tone for when we're speaking. It felt like Stacy was legitimately yelling at me and he wanted to kill me, but like I can't tell if that's actually the case sometimes, because I'm just like sitting there calmly. I'm like, yeah, man, I'm just not feeling this sort of things. And then I feel like Stacy's like, you fuck. Can I swear on this?
We actually insist on it.
Okay, you fucking moron. You piece of shit moron. Stop talking.
No, I mean, it was a compound effect. Everyone's been going at Mitch. I think your argument's pretty reasonable.
Everyone is going at Mitch. I think it's somewhat also unfairly, because there's one thing I think all of us agree on.
I got a shout out. Part of it was because the gulliness person. What's his name? I don't know. That guy was going in with some sarcastic shit. And I'll admit, it tripped me off a little bit, and I was in fight or flight mode a little bit. So, but, you know, I didn't mean to hit you with any strays, so.
No, it's okay. It's just, I always find it amusing when you like discuss things, whether it's on like Twitter, a Discord channel, any sort of like Slack, Reddit, whatever it is. It's really difficult to read tone from people, and you don't always know if they're actually angry or joking or just being pleasant. Because it's a lot of times on Twitter, I think most of the time, it's tone that usually gets people like dunked on. It's like someone will say something stupid, then I'll get retweeted like, this is stupid, like this is a really dumb tweet. Then I think to myself, I say a lot of dumb tweets, but my circle know that I'm joking around. So maybe tweets are just inside jokes that we don't interpret because we're not inside those communities. Food for thought.
What do you thought? I like that. I'm thinking about that.
But while we're here, there's debate, and I think like I've debated with Schwinn about this, and I think Schwinn is also more closely aligned to you, where Mitch has very important limitations as center, and I agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm still on board with giving him up to $15 million a year. Beyond that, I'd have to think about it.
For how many years?
Four. I'd give him four for 60. That's kind of my upper bound on what I would give Mitch. Mm-hmm. Robert Williams just got four for 54. I don't think Mitch is as good as Robert Williams at this point. Last year, I would have said differently.
Is that so sad?
It is very sad. I mean, well, I'm also 2 years ago, I don't think Jared Allen was appreciably better than Mitchell Robinson.
That's what I'm saying. Like, so many people got better than Mitch.
There's a fight with Net fans all the time about Mitch being better than Jared Allen.
Well, now he's on the Cavs, so we can say that he's better. Because if he was still on the Nets, we'd be like, he fucking sucks.
And I'm not also sure that either of those guys, even Robert Williams, is better than him on defense. Robert Williams is very mobile and switchable, but he also plays with four other players at all times who are very switchable as well.
He's also not as big as Mitch. He can block shots and he's a rim protector, but there's a big difference between someone who's 6'9 and like 7'1. So
yeah, but so I'll open the floor to you, but my kind of short thoughts on Mitch are, I think he's an elite offensive rebounder, and like when people talk about him as a zero on offense, that gets overlooked. I think he's also, his vertical gravity and lob threat, especially with guards who are so floater at mid-range dependent, like IQ and maybe one day Deuce are. Maybe one day, God willing, Tibbs, right? But he also, opened...
God willing, RJ gets a floater game.
and I think that he like, you can have a really good offense with him. He can add to your offense with the right kind of complementary big. And I will cite the fact that him and Obi so far in their careers have been very effective together. I mean, they played over 600 minutes together and had a 118 offensive rating. So I think that when you talk about Randall and Mitch not working, and that's why I think a lot of the frustration in terms of, you know, a stretch player like Randall, like us needing a stretch player comes from. It's like, it's not just the shooting. It's also quick decision making. Like if you do have him in the dunker spot, do you have someone like a Draymond who can like play a 4-on-3 and really make that an effective threat, even with your limitations? Or do you have someone who's going to hold the ball? And I think it can really work with a guy who's with connectors and shooters. So I am, I'm not so convinced that Mitch really hampers your offense. Ideally, I'd like, if you told me we could get DeAndre Ayton or Jaren Jackson or one of those guys. But there's a reason those guys aren't available, right?
Ayton may be available.
If Ayton is available, I'm on board with that. I think we agree with that. Someone, mm-hmm. But I think where we differ is like a Miles Turner or...
Yes.
Like I don't know if you what your thoughts are on Jakob Poeltl, but I know there's a few people that would prefer.
Who would want Jakob Poeltl over Mitch?
I have seen that on Twitter.
Get the fuck out of here.
Okay, so we're aligned on that.
I see stuff with Jakob Poeltl as well. They'll be like, oh, look at like some of like some on off stuff for the adjusted stuff. And it's fair. I'm a big adjusted on off person as well. But like, I just watch him playing. He plays for the Spurs and like the Spurs suck. They don't care. Like, it doesn't matter. So it's like he does things that doesn't matter. Like, sure, he has some nice touch and he can defend a little bit. But I don't know. He's definitely like not as good as Jusuf Nurkić, and they're like similar in concept. It's like, I'd much rather have Nurkić than Jakob Poeltl.
Nurkić is available.
So, yeah. Nurkić is available.
Prefer Nurkić to Mitch as well. I mean, I think this is one thing we disagreed on. Nurkić or Turner. Yeah. So.
Yes. And I think I'm with you in that he does add offensive value. that I don't think that's really debatable. I think where the debate kind of comes in is that's the there's a floor there, or there's a however you want to say, like, that's the ceiling, I guess, with it. Like, there's a limited ceiling what Mitch can do on offense. And what I worry about, I'm thinking more like 2 years down the road, 3 years down the road of these sort of things, where the Knicks do get into the playoffs and you have a center who can't shoot, can't pass, doesn't set screens well, can't shoot free throws. So you're playing 4-on-5, more or less. If we're talking playoffs, it will absolutely work in the regular season without question. Just teams get better, they get smarter, they're actually doing game plans unlike the regular season. And then you could start game planning to the Knicks where they're like, oh, they're 4-on-5. And that's what really concerns me, is that I think you need someone on offense with different skills. And I won't even say better. I think it's different, a set of skills to help with IQ and RJ and Obi. The one thing for IQ, though, is going to be like, some centers are not going to give him the lob threat, so he needs to work on a different type of mid-range game, which he needs anyway. He needs like a pull-up elbow jumper, but that's something different. But they need.
Which he's flashed, by the way. He's flashed it, though. We need to see it more. Like, what's encouraging is that he can. What I was worried about with the mid-range is that, like, he shoots with a low release.
Yeah, he goes low.
Like, but on mid-range, and when he gets contested on spot-ups,
he does go up more. Yeah,
sometimes he will raise his release. The fact that he can do that is good. I mean, it's always with player development. It's like, well, if you get him to do it all the time, is that going to fuck up his shot?
Which, right.
I don't think any of us want to do that.
No.
So, but anyway, I'll...
Yeah, so I think they just need a center who can set screens, pass, and just be a normal role threat. Maybe not a lob threat, but at least a role threat. But then again, now that I am thinking about this more, who's really a traditional role threat these days? Like, not even a lob threat, like a traditional,
the guy who can,
not even a pick and pop, but it would be like
the free throw line,
like the pocket pass
at the free throw line.
Yeah.
And it's not a guaranteed dunk. So he has to make a decision. He has to either dribble with it.
Yeah. He has to, you know, like making the one dribble or the two quick dribbles and a pass out or stuff. Like, I don't see that much except for DeAndre Ayton.
I mean, Drummond, I guess, fits that mold, right? A little bit.
Well, Drummond also sucks, so.
Yeah.
I think the Knicks also just need someone, I don't even want to say can post up and score, but, like, can just be viable enough on offense where you have to respect him at the elbow and in. Just something as minimal as that. And I think, at least, like, you know, Miles Turner probably isn't as good as Mitch, but is better on offense, adds more layers on offense by putting the ball on the floor. You could say he sucks at three-point shooting. He's at least willing to take a open three-point shot. Mitch isn't willing to take an open 5-foot shot.
Yeah.
So those little things, I think Nurkic is just a bigger player, and I think that would just help the Knicks moving forward. But with all that said and all that concern, the Knicks can't just like throw in some random person to replace Mitch. Like, Jericho Sims isn't the answer. Taj Gibson's not the answer. And pretty much everyone outside of DeAndre Ayton, and you could debate on Nurkic,
are not the answer. Would you take a guy like Bamba? Or?
Professor brought up Bamba, so I want to hear Professor's thoughts on Bamba when we were in the
club. So I will acknowledge right off the bat, as I told you, that I think that the what Bamba represents is probably more exciting than Bamba himself, because I don't know like how transformative Mo Bamba is going to be. But I think,
where's he from, by the way?
Harlem Zone Mo Bamba.
It is.
I think that a lot for me comes down to what are you doing at the four next year? Because I think if you're going to go with Randall and you're committed to whether to get his value back up or whether because you want to make it work, I think the type of center that I want with Randall is not necessarily the same as the type of center that I would take with Toppin, but I think Bamba, because of what he represents, could work both ways, because he can be a lob finisher. He can shoot a league average from deep. He's big enough and long enough to have some impact on defense, and I don't think he's going to cost much more than think it's like 10 or 11 a year. Like, he's not going to cost a bunch.
Yeah, I would be shocked if he got more than like 30.
Yeah, which I think if I'm the Knicks, like, what I'd want to do next season, Noel's got to go because I can't pay $10 million a year to someone who just has never stayed healthy in his entire career. I'm not in love with keeping Mitch. I'm not dead set on getting rid of him. I do think, like Stacey said, he does a couple things at an elite level. The offensive rebounding is important for a team that's not great on offense. Mm-hmm. There is the vertical threat. I don't think it was there as much last year, but maybe that's because he was very out of shape. Maybe that's because the point guard play till the end was pretty, like, inconsistent. I'm cool with Bamba. I'm cool with Bamba at least as, like, plug him in for a year. It's not like they're trying to win the title next year. Plug him in, see what it looks like. And then maybe, you know, after that season, yeah, we really want to draft a guy like this or make more of an effort for someone like Miles Turner because we think it really works. Or maybe you realize, you know what, we really don't need that kind of guy. But I like Bamba at least as representative of where I think they should go. You know, it's not a world where there's 10 guys out there who are going to fit the role as a 3-and-D center. None that I can think of anyway.
Yeah, I mean, a 3-and-D center, like, good ones, I mean, it's like 3-and-D wings, right? When they say a 3-and-D wing, one of those two things is in air quotes, right? Like, Robert Covington is a bad example, but really, like, Courtney Lee was a 3-and-D wing. Yep. Like, okay, he's fine.
Well, Robert Covington now is both a 3-and-D player.
He's watched. But I'm talking about peak Robert. Peak Robert Covington has looked at that archetype.
Yes.
Or Shane Battier was that archetype, right? Mm-hmm. But most of those guys are limited on one end, you know, especially, and it becomes more apparent in the playoffs. Like, they might 2.4 attempts per game their way to a 40% three-point percentage in the regular season. Those guys are getting left open in the playoffs, and they're not going to make good the same way. But same thing with bigs, it's even more extreme. This is why Chet Holmgren, for those that follow the draft, is extremely highly valued. This is why I had Jaren Jackson over Luka, and anyone can clown me for this, but like, Jaren Jackson Jr. was the fact that he could shoot the way he did and protect the rim the way he does, mm-hmm. even with the rebounding flaws, even with the fact that the off the dribble game was still very much theoretical at that point, and he's made good on it. Like, those guys are just tough to find. And that's why if the Knicks have someone like that in the draft, they think they can take a flyer on, they should absolutely mm-hmm. do it. Mm-hmm. But short of the stretch five, now you're talking about the can take one dribble and do stuff. And I'll even say Jericho Sims has shown that ability more than Mitch has.
Yes, he has.
He's shown the ability to grab and go. He sets real mm-hmm. screens. I don't think he's as good an offensive rebounder as Mitch, but he's actually a pretty good offensive rebounder.
Yeah, he's fine.
He's a good passer. Like, when he catches offensive rebounds, he's had a knack for just finding shooters immediately. Mm-hmm. You know, he keeps his, I think when you're just more comfortable with the ball, you can keep your head up and look, right? You're not it doesn't feel like multitasking, mm-hmm. I guess, which Mitch is like, you know, he's not as capable with the ball in his hands. So a better version of that, I can see how that would help. But I don't think there's a player out there who gives you that without taking away a lot on defense or being super expensive. And, you know, Turner, you got 2 more years on his contract, $20 million a year. I don't think he's the same level of defender that Mitch is. I don't think the spacing necessarily, like, he can hit it, but it's also defenses are not falling over themselves to close it out on Miles Turner.
But he does demand at least five more feet of attention than Mitch does.
Five is a stretch. Like, I think they would, no pun intended, but you know, the teams are willing to let him shoot from there. And he's shooting at 33%. Like, what is the value out of that? Like, Julius Randle shoots at 33%. I think that
above the rim, Julius Randle, though, above the break. I'm sorry. There's,
yeah, I mean, if non-COVID in general, but I mean, with Julius, like, I think that, like, not to pile on him again, but yeah, I think a lot of what made Mitch ineffective, but it's tough because there were times where Julius would try to feed him, and Mitch wasn't ready. You do need like a really, like, I think it speaks more to the fact that Obi is a really, really good passer from the power forward position and mm-hmm. never stands still. So even the fact that his 3-point jumper has been inconsistent, like, he's the very rare player that can make up for spacing with just constant movement and intelligence.
And he moves the ball so quickly, you know?
Yeah. Which goes to, I guess, Drew's point that, or Drew and Benji had said this earlier today, like, you can obviously have a great offense with a guy like Mitchell Robinson, but mm-hmm. it does require special players. And I think in that regard, Obi mm-hmm. is special. So maybe that shouldn't be a point in Mitch's favor.
I mean, it kind of is, though, because for, I think, unless this is my really bad attempt at a segue, but we are going to discuss Julius Randle at some point, right? So, like, if Julius Randle's gone, then there is a pretty decent reason just to, like, to keep Mitch then, because there aren't really any answers, and we absolutely know it works. So it's like, then it's like, give Mitch 3 years and just find someone in the draft over the mm-hmm. next couple mm-hmm. years to be that guy instead of a free agent mm-hmm. or something. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's I think that's the closest to where I'm at, because the most discouraging part for me is something that hasn't been mentioned yet. It's Mitch has actually, I think, regressed as a free throw shooter since coming to the league.
In the green room, Professor was saying that he's terrible.
And it doesn't even look like, I mean, Clyde mentions it literally every time.
Every single shot.
It doesn't even look like he's trying to make it. And that's concerning because, like, one of the good attributes you would think is that when you're a lob threat, you can catch the ball and go up, or you grab a lot of offensive rebounds, is you're going to get fouled a lot. And I haven't looked up his free throw rate, but I would imagine it's something in at least the 40s, and that might be being conservative. And if he can't make those free throws on a team that, spoiler alert, guys, the Knicks are not very good at shooting free throws mm-hmm. overall. It's a dicey proposition. So I think he's an imperfect solution for now. If he improves, or if he reaches like a Gobert level on defense, it makes you pause. But I wouldn't want to pull the plug on that right now unless we could get an Aiden like guy.
52.8 foul rate for Mitch this season.
Yeah, so he gets fouled a lot and can't hit him. So, it's almost like you don't want him. Well, you want him to get the offensive rebound, but like, it's almost like you'd rather just he kicked it out. You know, sometimes when he gets to the offensive rebound.
Are you concerned at all? I was telling Drew earlier that I am, that other than staying out of foul trouble, which is a useful, very important skill that Mitch has shown obvious growth with, to me, he hasn't really developed anything else since he came into the league. Like, he's a smarter all-around defender and more effective, I think, because he's on the floor more. And I think he's become more of an impact on the offensive glass because also he's on the floor more. But like, I don't think he's improved at all as a passer. He hasn't improved at all as a shooter. I don't think he's improved setting screens. Like, my concern basically is that like, if this is what Mitch is, and he's had the injury now, but like, he hasn't had like a torn ACL or something that has robbed him of his athleticism. And this is Mitch with all systems go. I would be worried about giving this guy 4 years and then he has any kind of an injury that impacts his athleticism, because I don't think he has shown that he's picking it up in any other field. And that would make me worry about what a diminished Mitch would be like. Obviously, that's a worst case scenario.
Yeah. I'm going to push back a little bit. I think that he was a good offensive rebounder always, but he's improved from there. He was not a good defensive rebounder early in his career. He didn't know how to box out. He did not know how to make the decision between contesting and not, like, there on one extreme you have Kevin Love, who just wouldn't contest because he wanted to pad his stats. And on the other extreme you have guys like, I wouldn't even say Nerlens Noel, but most like freakishly athletic rookies. They just want to block everything. For what it's worth, I think Jericho Sims actually errs too much on the side of, he is in that mold, but he actually errs too much on the side of not contesting. And he's like, he's been trying, like, it's not laziness, right? I think
he's terrified of Thibodeau.
He's just figuring out that decision.
He's petrified of Tibbs.
Yeah, that's probably it. But I think Mitchell Robinson has really become an elite rebounder. I think that his positioning, I think just being able to stay down, like you, I don't think you can just minimize the foul, avoiding fouls, because like it's part of staying down on shot fakes or understand a reading a ball handler better, right? Or reading the guy with the ball in his hands better, because he's more able to understand this is when I should jump up, this is when I should use my length, and that translates also to when he has to be on the perimeter. This is when I should be lower in a stance. This is when he's definitely going to shoot. So I would minimize those things. Like his defensive fundamentals, like his improvement on defense, this is as good as I could have expected. On offense, there's been incremental improvement in offensive rebounds and nothing else. So I think that would be where I would defer. But that does tell me that in 4 years, the only things we've heard about Mitch's offense are Instagram videos and people associated with him complaining that he doesn't get post touches. But I remember, like, I think his uncle or someone complained on Twitter. And then the next game, they threw him, like, five entry passes. Fournier did, Quickly did. Like, everyone threw him passes. I don't think he caught one. He's not Nerlens Noel, but he's also definitely not Joel Embiid. Let's get that clear. And that nothing has changed there in 4 years. So on offense, I agree with you. The question is, how much can a defense-only big who gives you a couple things on offense? And the thing is, if he reaches, okay, I'll ask this to you guys. He is like a poor man's Rudy Gobert right now.
He's like a poor man's Clint Capella.
I wouldn't go that far, because I think that, I think he's pretty similar to Clint on defense.
And okay,
I think
what about Clint's second cousin?
He's in Clint's neighborhood, he's a Clint peer. Maybe Clint is like the older brother, and he's the younger brother. But
what about like an uncle through marriage?
He's like, I'm not touching that. He's like Lonzo to Clint's LaMelo. Can we say that?
If there was a fourth brother between Lonzo and the one who's not in the league, then
the Angelo. If
Mitch got to play with Trae Young, I mean, Clint Capella is not skilled on offense at all. Maybe slightly better hands. He's smaller than Mitch.
He sets better screens.
He sets screens.
But he's playing with Trae Young. Like he would make my screens look good.
I don't think that's necessarily completely true. Come on.
About Stacey's screens specifically.
I said a hard screen, man. Come on.
I'll talk about Stacey's screen.
I think at least you could say that's a mitigating factor, though, right? But I would put him in the Capella tier on defense, at least.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so how, like, if he gets to from that tier, and I think we can all agree Capella is not in the Gobert tier. If he gets to the Gobert tier on defense, does that mitigate the fact that he, and if you don't think he can get to that tier, that's fine too. But would that, how much does that mitigate, like, you know, the kind of offensive limitations you're talking about?
It still presents the same thing, because Rudy Gobert on offense is also better, like, is absolutely still a very good offensive player.
He has
like
a post, he has a semblance of a post game.
The problem is with, like, Utah is that, like, he's not, like, really good on offense. Like, he does all the little things, like, amazingly. And Utah also has, well, Utah has a range of things that I actually don't think is all completely Rudy Gobert, but he plays like a very small part on offense, but it's not necessarily him. It's more of like his skill set. But like, yeah, that's the thing. Like, Rudy Gobert works because he does like all the little things on offense perfectly. Mitch doesn't do the little things at all. So it's like Mitch needs to be Rudy Gobert on defense, and then like...
Well, wouldn't you call offensive rebounding a little thing?
Rudy Gobert can offensive rebound. He can set. He's probably one of the best screeners in the league. He clears up so many open looks for like Donovan Mitchell and everything along those lines. He does set screens off the ball. He does move well. He can post up, catch the ball on a mismatch. Like, Rudy Gobert can do things on offense. The problem is he's not DeAndre Ayton on offense, and that's a limitation. But Rudy Gobert is still very good.
If someone isn't DeAndre Ayton, right?
And well, I say Rudy works because he does all the little things except be a true scoring threat.
I think if you still had perennial def. I mean, and by the way, he had a case obviously this year for defensive player of the year.
Well, he definitely should have won it over Marcus Smart.
I don't hate Marcus Smart. I'm not going to get into that.
But... No, I'm going to fuck that guy.
But Rudy Gobert is arguably the best defender in the league. Maybe to some people, not even that arguably. He just is. Mm-hmm. But what if he just didn't set screens as well and he was still that guy?
Utah would suck even more than they do right now.
But he'd still be a very valuable player. If Utah sucked, it probably wouldn't have as much to do with him, right?
Well, it would play a part, because if he's not giving Donovan Mitchell clean looks, is Donovan Mitchell really making more contested shots than we're talking about?
How much is he giving Donovan Mitchell clean looks, and how much should we credit Donovan Mitchell for that?
I will not credit Donovan Mitchell for that, and I will credit Rudy Gobert for that.
Okay. I do think I would be interested to see how much better Mitch would look next to a better guard, at least. I think that his screen assists, I haven't looked them up either. I can look them up now.
Mitch's screen assists, I know, ended up being about 3.3. I wrote about him a couple weeks ago with Strickland. Gobert had like, Mitch was like 2.8 or 3.3 a game. Gobert was like almost triple that. Nurkic was...
Mitch putting up that college GPA.
No. He's putting that triple double up, zero Gobert, did, the 0.3 pounds of screen assists.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm curious. Yeah, like how much of that is the guard, and how much of Gobert's value really comes from screen assists. But another thing I wanted to ask, because Benji brought this up, Benji Ritholtz, you know, the Jazz, or not Benji, someone asked Benji this, and I thought it was an interesting point. The Jazz do not help Gobert or the ball handler on pick and rolls at all. They play 2-on-2. The Knicks do not do that. That's a Tibbs thing. Do you think that that is perhaps hiding some of Mitch's value, that if they did leave him in 2-on-2 situations, the defense would be even better? Even on the one hand, like, Tibbs' defensive results even this year have been really good, particularly without Kemba. But, you know, I would be interested to think, you know, I'd be interested to ask you, or do you think it's more of a situation where Gobert is the only big, really, or like there's one or two bigs who are worthy of that level of trust?
I think Gobert is a completely different class from Mitch. And I think, to the point of like, they have similarities on offense, but I feel like discussing, you know, do we think Mitch could do this thing that Gobert could do would be like, back in the day, like, this is going to sound like an extreme example, but like wondering if Al Harrington could score like Gilbert Arenas, because they both scored a lot of points for their teams. Like, but there's a difference between someone doing it like at a Hall of Fame elite level. And I think Mitch is really good. To me, my instinct is that Gobert is an entirely different class of even defensive center than Mitch is, because Mitch is like one of the best defensive centers, I think, in the league. And it's certainly like one of the best Nick defensive centers that I've ever seen. But Gobert is like one of the best defensive centers, like, ever. I mean, that's a different level.
The counterpoint would be, I know there's people who think that Elfrid Payton and Reggie Bullock were elite defenders. I'm not of that mindset. No.
I'm 100% not.
I definitely am not of the mindset that Kemba Walker and Evan Fournier were great defenders, or that RJ Barrett has been even good this year, for that matter, with a few exceptions. You disagree on RJ? We might have to save that for part two, but because we started talking about this earlier today, I know that
we did.
But the Knicks do not have impact perimeter defenders that they play consistently, right?
No.
And they still had an elite defense for 2 years. Last year, you could argue Noel covered them. This year, you could see Noel was hurt. Taj was hurt, had the baby, like, went through stuff for the first
didn't have months. His HEH at some points.
Maybe. But Mitch was out of shape, which that is the biggest potential issue, is that, like, if this guy really, if you can't rely on him to come to camp in shape. Like, it's one thing with Dennis Rodman where you're like, all right, Dennis is going to be Dennis, but Mitchell Robinson hasn't earned that. But once he fixed them, once he got in shape, the Knicks were not running out good. Like, Alec Burks is a solid defender at the two. He is a bad defender at the one.
Yes.
Evan Fournier is a bad defender. Julius Randle did not play defense this year. And then you have RJ Barrett, who
I don't think is at best he's a neutral defender. And this year, like last year, he was locking up dudes. I was really impressed with his defense last year. I did not think he was a positive defender this year.
Okay, that's fair. He was not locking up people like he was last year. So I will say Mitch.
It was Mitch then, right?
Yeah, no, it's absolutely. It's Tibbs' system and Mitch. And then also, Mitch did get a chance to play when, like, IQ and Grimes and Obi and RJ. Gotta, like, remember, like, Mitch would have, like, those lineups? Like, Tibbs would give, like, a little snippet of it. And then you got to see really what the defense would look like. So that I'm basically giving you, like, yeah, Mitch probably was mostly the reason for the defense for the last half of the season.
And I think that's my counterpoint to Matt, who's saying, I mean, quite appropriately, right, that Rudy is a guy who's been to the playoffs all the time, who's doing it at a certain level in more meaningful circumstances, which I won't disagree with. But the counterpoint to that is he gets to play on a team with, with pieces that make sense. Now, Donovan Mitchell, for some reason, has decided to not be remotely impactful on defense, but...
He's somehow worse than Julius Randle.
Yeah, and I would still say I would rather have a guard that's worse at defense than a wing or a forward.
Yes, I would agree with you too. I'm just saying in terms of like how bad Donovan Mitchell's been. Like if you thought Julius Randle was bad, like Donovan Mitchell's doing Julius Randle defense in the playoffs right
now.
That's
what you have to do to end up on the Knicks. He probably thinks he's just emulating Randle's example.
Please, I can't have Donovan Mitchell on the Knicks. I'll lose my mind if this happens.
The thing is, at Louisville, and if you ever watch Louisville play, especially under Rick Pitino, they had his drills, he's famous for these drills where he just does one-on-one full court drills, which would be brutal. I think I would quit the team if I had to do that. The team.
I'm not doing one-on-one, yeah.
Full court. But that's, and then every time, like all of, they just churned out these guards who ball hawk all the time. And Donovan Mitchell was that guy. And he was the best of those guys because he's 6'3", 6'10" wingspan, crazy athletic, very quick, great instincts. And the fact that that didn't translate at all is just really shocking, you know?
Well, we're going to get into Drew's clear hatred for RJ Barrett in part two of the episode. Also want to talk about the Julius Randle question that Schwinn raised earlier today. What would you trade for Randle? Or what would you try to get back in a deal? And other subjects as well. But that'll be it for part one tonight. So, Drew, thank you for staying up past your bedtime with us. And we will have you on again tomorrow to complete the episode.
Drew, sorry, real quick. Is there anyone you want to plug?
You can find me at the Strickland Discord now because I have a Twitter. It's Scooter Tweets, but I'm not on Twitter. Twitter's a terrible place. I'm tired of it. So come see me in the Strickland Discord. You become that for a Patreon. I think it's $5 tier. If you give $5, you get to hang out with me virtually and see how not smart I actually am.
See, since this pod is free, you're getting right now the free Drew. But once you pay the $5 and get...
Ooh, yeah, you pay that $5, you get the full Monty.
It's a different experience.
The only Drew.
There is. So, thank you for that.
Maybe.
Nah, that was an OnlyFans joke, but I think it was poorly executed. So, anyway.
If you want to get the good OnlyFans joke, you have to sign up to Stacey's Patreon. So, everybody, thank you for joining us for part one, and hang around one more day for part two. Take care.